This is Phil Ferrand, and I am not driving home today. I didn't even go into work today. We actually had a bit of inclement weather here in Springfield, Missouri. They were predicting 1 to 2 inches of some kind of snowy, sleety, icy precipitation down south in Arkansas. They were predicting that they might even get as much as a quarter to a half inch of ice, which when whenever the weatherman starts talking about ice in our area, everyone begins to seize up. That's due to an ice storm that we had in 2007, 2008. It was really bad, and so everyone starts getting nervous, but there was some speculation as to exactly what we were going to get, whether it was going to be snow or sleet or ice, and it just depended on how the air currents were moving, all that kind of stuff. As it turned out, for Springfield, we ended up with probably a half inch to an inch of sleet with an ice mixture. And early this morning, about 6:30 or so, I got a text message, or 6 o'clock-ish or so, 6:30, I got a text message from my main client that, in fact, they were closed down because the roads were starting to get bad, and they just made the decision. So I told my wife that, well, I suppose I could go sit out in my car and do this. And she said, why don't you just record it in your office? She said, if you need something to drive, she said, I think Clara has a truck around here somewhere. And so we did find Clara's little ice cream truck, which Clara calls her ice cream truck. And so periodically, I could do that if you're really interested in hearing some driving sounds. There you go. It's an amazing stereophonic spectacular for those of you who are wearing headphones. Okay. Anyways, so it's been a good week. I did actually work from home today. Hooray for internet. And I haven't done that in a really long time, so I really had to kind of stay focused, because it's easy to get distracted when you're used to being at home and just kind of lollying around on your own schedule. But it was good to just stay focused, keep going, and, you know, I got some good work done. So that's good. Don't feel bad about billing today. Amanda in the Scleaberry Tree is pottering along. Probably won't get as many words in this week as I did last week, because I've been working on a song. I think I have the song roughed in at this point, and the little performance roughed in. And of course, when you're having to write a song and everything has to fit exact meter, things take a little longer. So whereas this point in the week I should be somewhere around 3,000 words, 3,200 words, somewhere in there. I'm actually only about 1,700. But I did finish up another chapter. So, you know, it will all be fine. Since I work today, I should have tomorrow, unless something big comes up. And I should have Saturday. They both should be good work days. We'll see how far we can get. This week, I remembered that I had read an article that was an interesting article. And some of this we've covered before in other podcasts, but this is kind of like the latest. You know, this article came out in January of 2012 or 13. Maybe it was 12. Maybe this isn't as late. No, I think it was 2013. Hold on. I'm in my basement and I can check. Let me just check real quick and see. Because I looked at it. When I looked at it, I thought, oh, that's recent. But then it did. It came out January 16th, 2013. And the name of the article was The Irrational Consumer: Why Economics is Dead Wrong About the Choices We Make. And we have actually talked about this multiple times. We've talked about the fact that if your model of economics does not account for the flesh, you will be dead wrong. And in fact, in the downturn of 2008, I think it was even Alan Greenspan had to come out and testify before Congress and say that he was wrong about his theories about the market. That if his whole theory was, Alan Greenspan's big theory was you should just leave stuff alone and it will all take care of itself and it will come out the best in the end. And after reviewing some of the things that happened in the downturn and what led up to the downturn in 2008, he actually came out and said, no, that's not right. And he was quite surprised by the fact that people aggregated up did not behave in a rational manner. And at that point in that podcast, I had mentioned that you have to account for the flesh in your calculations of how people will behave. And if you don't, if you ignore that, then you're going to get big surprises. So that's what caught me at my eye about this article. But also, I'm doing this article as a precursor to a podcast that I'd like to do next week concerning Claudia Christian. I'm reading her biography at the moment. For those of you who don't know, her big role was Commander Ivanova out of Babylon 5, which is the reason that I picked up the book to begin with. But it's turned pretty interesting because she was on a big enough downward spiral and ended up being drugged down by alcoholism to the point where she was able to look at her flesh eye to eye and really see what it was. So while I haven't finished the book yet, so I can't say. I don't think, she's a Christian per se. She has very much come to the conclusion that within her there is an angel and a demon, or as she says, an angel and a monster. So that's pretty interesting. So I'm going to talk about that next week, but that's kind of anecdotal, and there are some things in this article that, in fact, are presentations of what the author claims are the latest science when it comes to the brain. And so I thought that was pretty interesting. Anyway, so the irrational consumer, why economics is dead wrong about the choices we make. The author of the article is talking about Daniel McFadden, who is an economist and has written a paper called The New Pleasure, The New Science of Pleasure. And it shows the many ways that economics fails to explain how we make our decisions. The old economic theory used to say that consumers, the old economic theory of consumers, sorry, it's weird that I'm not driving and it's like I don't have that distraction. I have other distractions and I'm not used to this. So I'll stumble through this and hopefully I'll be driving next week. The old economic theory of consumers said that people relished choice. But in fact, we've actually gone over some of this stuff that that's not necessarily true, that in fact, making choices is physically exhausting. And studies have been done that show that if you give customers the choice of six different jams versus the choice of 42 or 24 different jams, they will in fact buy the jam more often if you only give them six choices. Because if you give them 24, then there is, in my opinion, this onset of fear that they won't make the right choice and they'll get so tangled up in that eventually they'll just not want to think about it anymore. And that, in fact, if you force someone to make decision after decision after decision after decision, that they're most likely, sorry that my chair is squeaking, that they're most likely to get, in the words of the author of this article, lazy and dumb. And the author says that's why in the checkout stands there's all the little impulse items there. in the store. Because they assume that you've been making all these choices about what you're going to buy, and that has caused you to get into a state of mental exhaustion, and it's more likely that you'll be looking down at those things, go, oh, I really need some gum. I need some M&Ms. Oh, I really need some pistachio nuts. That's, oh, extra lighters, sure. You know, that's why that stuff's there. Because over time, store owners and shopkeepers have figured out that after you go through this process of going down your list and picking things up, that you're tired. Your brain is tired. That you are low on glucose, as we talked about many, many podcasts ago. Also, when it comes to us being not perfectly rational when we're faced with our decision, we've talked about this in the past as well, the availability bias. I think we've talked about this. How that you make decisions not on what your experiences were, but what you can remember of your experiences. So the example they give is going to Six Flags. That people say, oh, let's go to Six Flags. That was so much fun. And they forget that they stood in line for hours and hours, and all they just remember is how much fun it was to ride that roller coaster. In addition, there is an interesting bias in us when it comes to social interactions, that we do things not because it's the rational thing to do, but because everybody else around there us is doing it. They talk about the author talks about this paper that McFadden presents a study that shows Korean peasant women within the same village tend to use the same type of contraception. Even though there is substantial persistent diversity across the villages, and he says this pattern could not be explained by income, education, or price, word of mouth was what made the difference. That they talked with each other, and then they say, well, if it's good enough for that person, then it must be good enough for me. So, anyways, the final example he says. And one of the things that's popular right now is the theory of hyperbolic discounting. That this, they try to explain using this why people don't properly evaluate reward over time. And they say, well, you know, nappers and procrastinators and like Congress, they'll take rewards now and pain later over and over again. And of course, we can see where that's going because sequestration is just coming up. And so what the popular psychologists tend to do is they try to blame this on the fact that we discount the pain that's coming later in favor of what we want now. And I think there's some of that going on, but I'm much more interested in what the article talks about next. And they say that they believe what's really going on now, and I quote, neurology suggests that it hardly makes sense to speak of the brain in the singular because two very different parts of the brain process choice for now and later. And of course, this is where my ears start perking up. It says the choice to delay gratification is mostly processed in the frontal system, but studies show that the choice to do something immediately gratifying is processed in a different system, the limbic system, which is more viscerally connected to our behavior, our reward pathways, and our feelings of pleasure and pain. In other words, what they're saying is that we do have these two competing systems within us that are vying to make decisions. So that's pretty interesting because that sounds like spirit and flesh. And the author of this article actually interviewed McFadden, And one of the things he said was classical economists used to posit that some consumers are rational. We make decisions to maximize our pleasure, end of story. But your paper reviews all the ways we know that consumers aren't in fact rational, but prone to all sorts of biases and habits that pull us from any strictly rational view of the consumer. And McFadden agreed. He says, that's a good summary, but I think the final message is that neither the physiology of pleasure nor the methods we use to make choices are as simple or single-minded as the classic economist thought. A lot of behavior is consistent with the pursuit of self-interest, but in novel or ambiguous decision-making environments, there's a good chance that our habits will fail us. In other words, we can be rational and we can make rational choices, but there's other times that we just go off the rails. And why should that be? Well, in my mind, the reason that that should be is that in fact there is this war going on, and depending on whether or not we're tired or had enough rest or have gotten enough nutrition or whether we've made a habit in our lives of making good choices or making bad choices, all those things factor in as to whether or not the flesh or the spirit is going to get the upper hand. And as long as I'm right here, let me just pause to say I do believe that in fact the operation of the flesh and spirit is going on in everyone, not just those who are redeemed, because I believe that God loves everyone enough that he's whispering to all of them and that he is drawing them and helping them to understand. Next week, when we talk about Claudia Christian, it's very interesting because as she's going through this thing, she realized there is the voice of the angel within her, to use her terminology. So this was pretty interesting that in fact, people who were doing analysis of economics are now saying that in fact, there seem to be these competing systems. Now, what's interesting is that businesses recognize that these competing systems are going on, and they recognize that they can short circuit your rational processes to get you just keep doing things, whether they're good or not. McFadden talks about the fact that people in situations where trade is possible or even promising may find it safer to turn away. That it takes trust to trade. And so McDonald's, he says, is successful because it has created a brand people trust. They know what they're going to expect, even if what they're getting is very low in nutritional value. At least they know I can go there, I can get that. And of course, businesses offer a 30-day free trial or satisfaction money back. Or bring us a better price and we'll refund the difference because what they're trying to do is engender trust. Because it's too easy when people are faced with a choice to just go, forget it, and walking away. He also gave a really interesting example of what real estate agents often do to take advantage of your discomfort with decision making. What they do. Said a good agent will show you a few houses that are expensive and not very nice, and then one at almost the same price, but far nicer. And he said that many buyers will respond by stopping their search and jumping on this bargain because they just want the choice to be over. And this reminded me of how I dread every time I have to buy a new car because I already know what I'm going to do. I'm going to literally scour the listings and consider dozens and dozens of cars. And it's going to take days and days and days. But by the time I finally get done with all that, I will find something that's good. And I did. I drive a 1999 Chevy Prism. It's got 147,000 miles on it now, 149,000 miles, somewhere in there. And I'm going to drive it till 200. It's a great car. I got it cheap. I think I got it when it only had 50 some odd thousand miles on it, and I got it for $4,800 years ago. So that's the car I'm usually driving when I'm driving home. But that only happens because I'm willing to invest the pain in looking for that car. He was also talking about one of the interesting things that happens in hyperbolic discounting. He said, you'll go to a car dealership and you want a model that has exactly the sound system that you want. And the guy will say, well, it took me 3 days to get that model, but I got one here right now that has a better sound system, and it'll only cost you $300 more. And he said, a lot of people will say, yeah, go, I want it right now. Because, in my opinion, the flesh is going, oh, then you gotta come back, and you're gonna have to put off this decision, it's so hard. Whereas he said, if the dealer would say, yeah, we can do that. We can get it for you in 3 days. And in 3 days, we could also get you a better one that would be $300 more. He said, nobody will spend the $300 more. It's only because we're ready to get the decision over with. We want this right now that we're willing to spend the extra money. So all I would say is pay attention to those things in your own life. Is there something as you're making a decision that your flesh is kind of pushing you? Oh, come on, let's get it done. Just get it done. Get it done. And if it is, you might just step back and say, okay, well, hold up, hold up. Is this really the time to do this? And if it is, certainly jump. If it's not, maybe you can back up a little bit. Here's one of the interesting things he did say, McFadden did say towards the end of this article. Our brains seem to operate like committees, assigning some tasks to the limbic system and others to the frontal system. The quote switchboard does not seem to achieve complete, consistent communication between the different parts of the brain. So, in other words, what he's saying is that as we're making these decisions, it's not that the spirit always wins out or the flesh always wins out. It's that switchboard that sometimes makes a decision to shunt the decision off to the spirit, and sometimes it makes a decision to shunt the decision off to the flesh. And that's our will, in my opinion. That's our will that sits in the middle. And that's why it's always good for us to realize that there are many inputs that are coming into every decision that we make, and try to get some light on them so we can see them. Try to get some light on where is our discomfort about this decision coming from? Is it discomfort because it's the bad wrong decision, or is it discomfort because the flesh doesn't want us to make that decision? Where does our desire to make this decision come from? Is it the desire of the flesh just to be gratified? Or is it the desire of the spirit that says, that's a good decision. You should make that decision. So, anyways, just a few little things to think about. It was an interesting article, but the big thing I took away from this article is that what I'm seeing in the study of neurology and the study of the brain is that more and more scientists are coming to the conclusion that I am not one in my brain, that I am many. And this thing that scripture talks about, has talked about for thousands of years, that there is this war between the flesh and the spirit within us that Paul talked about way back in Romans 7. Those things that I want to do, I don't do. Those things that I don't want to do, I do. And other places where he identified the works of the flesh and the works of the spirit. That in fact, we're seeing exactly what popular culture says. That in that analogy, we do have an angel on one shoulder and a devil on the other. And it really is up to us to decide which we're going to listen to. This is Phil Farrand, and I have driven the ice cream truck. Hopefully, next week I'll actually be in my car. Have a good week.